It's 8:11 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, following an interview for an applicant for service area number 5 tomorrow, the Lake Rockport Estates area, the Summit County Council will meet in the Sheldon Richens Auditorium to begin a discussion at about 1:45 about the council's participation in the Central Wasatch Commission. In the studio with a preview of that, as well as some of the other agenda items, County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So has the council decided to put in another $50,000 for funding the Central Wasatch Commission?
You know, this is the first time that we've actually, I believe that the council has seen an actual number that's been part of the request. Council Member Robinson lined this up probably about a month ago as a future discussion item. Then we had some scheduling issues in order to get some of the Central Wasatch Commission staff in to talk about this to tee up Council Member Robinson to propose that. So I think there'll be some discussion about that tomorrow.
Okay. The discussion topics look like it really will be a review of goals for 2019. Most of it seems to be focused on traffic and visitation issues up the Wasatch Canyons. Are we talking about traffic being driven by the Icon and Epic Passes?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what all is driving traffic. I mean, certainly our ski areas and our mountains are getting more visited each year for a lot of different reasons. Within the purview of the Central Wasatch Commission is some of the trying to work on some federal land designations within the mountains as well. So I think that's another focus of the Central Wasatch Commission that's important to Summit County. There's so much connection, there's certainly not road connection, but there's connection between how our different mountain passes work for recreation. That's why we've been involved in these discussions in the past, and we'll see where the council goes in that in the future.
Yeah, I'm also paying for a study that was looking up Parley's Canyon. Where are things with that?
So the study has been completed, and it's mostly a study as part of the environmental process that supports part of the environmental process on 224 in order to seek transit alternatives in the future. So that study was approximately $400,000 that was funded by the Mountain Accord, which is now the Central Wasatch Commission. So that's the benefit that Summit County has seen from that participation up until this point.
Well, we heard from Transportation Planning Manager Carolyn Rodriguez yesterday that 224 study is basically on hold for a while.
Well, that's correct. So now UDOT is in the process of looking at their next planning effort, which will also have a specific look at 224 and the interchange with I-80 and its connections with I-80. So we need to step back and allow that process to happen, which will be informed by the alternatives analysis that was completed last year.
Okay. And as you mentioned, the discussion yesterday looking at setting up this federal designation of National Conservation and Recreation Area. We've been talking about this for 2-3 years, and it still hasn't been done.
It still has not been done. There's been a little bit of turmoil of our congressional representation in at the federal level, which that means we need to re-educate folks on and staffs on what things are being forwarded. As well, there was discussion last legislative session about, what is the legislature's role and the state's role when federal designations are forwarded by local governments. So, we're going to have to deal with that as well. So it's gotten more complicated to do these things, not less complicated, of course.
I guess what I didn't see in that report are any goals about the Wasatch Back.
So I think that's going to be one of the discussion items that you'll hear from the council. It comes down to if the council is going to be investing money and participating in the Central Wasatch Commission, what do they feel they get out of that? Sometimes it's worth it to put up some money and be at the table as these discussions happen. I mean, we know that there's been controversy over the past about a one Wasatch and connections, aerial connections across our mountains. And and or tunnels, as those have come up in past discussions. So, you know, if you're not at those tables, what happens? So I think that's the wrangle back and forth about what do you get versus not being at the table.
So if we don't pay, if we, the Summit County doesn't pay, Chris Robinson loses his seat on that commission?
I would imagine there'd be changes to the makeup of the Central Wasatch Commission at that point. You know, Draper is no longer participating. So that's a difference from the Mountain Accord process. We're gonna be part of that discussion as far as the local level and the county's participation.
All right, then at 2:25 tomorrow, the council will be looking at amendments to the Health Department employee chart of positions. Look like you're changing some part-time positions to full-time?
That's correct, and probably the main thing around this from a cost perspective is that it doesn't cost the county anymore or the county general fund. The grants that the Health Department receives from the states fully support moving these positions from part-time to full-time, and it will simply allow more nursing staff to be available for that general nursing capability that we have, mostly around immunizations and those types of things. Also reinforcing some of our WIC program, Women and Infant Children program, that is always in need of more service.
Yeah, those grants, though, are those done on an annual basis, or do you?
They are done on an annual basis, but the health director, Rich Bulla, is pretty confident on the future of that. And, you know, he's very heavily involved at the state level on the projections of those grants and the projections of those monies coming to the county. So I'm confident that we're okay.
Later on, a discussion and possible adoption of the updated Trails Master Plan and Trail Design Standards. Anything remarkably new there?
I did page through it yesterday. You know, it is simply an update. The Basin Rec Board pulled this out of their overall master plan a few years ago in order to have a specific Trails Master Plan and specific design guidelines. The Administrative Control Board of Basin Rec has made a positive recommendation to the council to adopt this. So I'm imagining as they've gone through their process, as well as the contractor that was brought in to help with this process of redeveloping the plan, was the same contractor that worked on the county's active transportation plan. So also confident that there's good synergy between those.
Okay. Are you following the Rob's Trail issue?
Very peripherally. I'd rather that Basin Rec represent that.
Okay. Speaking about trails, what about the crossing, the safe crossing under or over 224? We had talked maybe at the Blue Roof. We still don't really have a location, right?
Yeah, well, there's the active transportation plan that is going to conclude in the next couple of months. We'll have some discussion about that. There's nothing specifically in this Trails Master Plan about that, except a need for connections that make it more viable to cross 224. So I'm going to wait for that planning effort to make any comments on that.
All right, then a 2-hour joint closed session with the Santa Fe Basin Recreation Board. I'm assuming this has to do with, this is it, the closing of the Gilmore property,
well,
at least,
you know,
the settlement of?
I always am hesitant to say this is it because we've been working on this for so long. This negotiation really started about a year before I came, so it's been going on for 6 years between private landowners, between the EPA, several other federal agencies and the state DEQ, we are down to decision time, and these decisions are likely going to be made on Wednesday.
I just a overview here. The parcel we're talking about, 458 acres.
It's actually 461.
461.
What's 3 acres between friends?
The county is scheduled to pay $10.3 million. Most of that coming from the Basin Rec?
That is correct. So it's a combination of the Basin Rec recreational open space bond and county general funds. And within this overall purchase, Basin Rec will end up owning about 336 acres of recreational open space that is now part of the Gilmore parcels. They will also end up having 100% interest in the Triangle parcel as recreational open space. So together, that's where that that total amount comes from.
Okay, so what's the general fund paying for this?
So the general fund, so the county's interest in the Triangle parcel is where the general fund comes into this. So back in the day when the city and the Park City and the county purchased that, the county's interest was about $2.25 million. And so the Basin Rec funds will essentially buy out the county's general fund interest in that, which will allow the county's general fund interest to be transferred into the purchase of the Gilmore parcel.
Okay, so you're taking it out of the open space funding and putting it from the general fund so that you could develop portion of that Gilmore property.
Right, because so the 125 acres that will be carved out of the Gilmore purchase that is clean and will no longer be part of the operating units that the Gilmore parcel is part of, the general fund will purchase that part of the property so that it is not restricted to open space.
So my understanding is that the Gilmore estate only receives $8.8 million of this. So where's that?
So there's about $1.5 million that will go towards settling the environmental liabilities associated with the property. So about a little less than $1.2 million of that goes to the EPA in order to be the contribution to settling those liabilities so that neither the Gilmore Foundation nor the county will have any liability, or Basin Rec will have any liability towards the cleanup. The EPA will be liable for that cleanup. It also goes to other federal partners that will be in charge of the restoration of the property after it's cleaned up. So about $385,000 goes to those federal partners, and then $20,000 of that will go to the state DEQ to settle their part of the liability.
Okay, so we're not going after the primary parties in this one here.
No, this
we're
one...
We're just sucking it up. Because, right, I mean, there's been talk about, you know, do we go back to United Park? But we know that there's no money in United Park anymore. But
well, that becomes the EPA's issue. So they still have to pay for the cleanup at this point. So if they go after the primary parties, that's going to be up to them under the scheme for this property.
Will we get reimbursed for that?
Reimbursed.
Well, if we're paying for $1.5 million is going to the EPA from Summit County.
Well, it goes to overall liability. So it's actually the Gilmore Foundation that's having their liability settled. So the $1.5 million is being paid from the total sale.
Got it. Okay. Let's see. When do we find out what the EPA cleanup will be?
That is the multi-million dollar question, Leslie, and we're still waiting for a final AOC and what's the environmental cleanup plan for that reach of property and the OU1, OU2s and 3. That is still in process with the EPA, and I'm not going to take a guess at when that's going to be done, because every time I hear a date, we go past it. So,
all right. Let's see. What about selecting the mental health vendor? We heard presentations last week.
Yeah, so the council asked for essentially a white paper on how they can go about how the recommendation committee is going about making their recommendation to the council. I think the council will receive that this week. And then I believe the actual recommendation and possible decision is going to be teed up for their next meeting on the 24th.
All right. Also wanted to make note that County Assessor Steve Martin has resigned.
Yes, so that kicks in the process as soon as the county council makes that formal designation that the office is open. That kicks in the process with the local party in order to make recommendations back to the council on how to fill that spot. In the meantime, the deputy will be will be named as the interim, so that they can fulfill those roles until a permanent assessor is named.
So I'm guessing this is kind of a good time of year, I guess, if you were to resign, so that you had time to get those assessments out before.
Yeah, I think the process of the of moving the assessments through the process between the assessor and the auditor and the treasurer, so that we get to tax bills at some point, that all will happen at the same pace, we'll watch that leadership change as we go through that.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I've got nothing else today, Leslie.
Hey, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. First, the Wasatch Community Service Alliance is a group of diverse community members seeking to identify and then address the unmet needs of Wasatch County residents. In the studio to tell us a little bit more about that is Renee Berkeley. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning.
So tell me, the Wasatch Community Service Alliance, what is this?
Well, we are the service pillar of the Wasatch Community Foundation. We started about 2 years ago. I'm their chair. And we started studying the data of Wasatch County to identify the unmet needs. And there were four that crept up. Hunger being number one, emergency housing being number two, affordable housing being number three, and public transportation being number four. So the first thing we wanted to tackle was hunger. As you may be aware, one out of five Utahns are hungry, and that's typically a child. And we have about 1,100 elementary school kids that are hungry every day. We have about 111 middle school kids, undetermined number of high school kids. And, you know, when you think about it, Americans waste 290 pounds of food a year. That would feed about 70 people three square meals in one day. So I really struggle with why we have hunger in this county, let alone in this country.
Each American wastes 290 pounds of food?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So there is a problem, though. And so what do we do about it?
Well, as you know, hunger is not unique in the nation. So what we did was we started looking at what other people have done. And what we found out is that there's a lot of families that are working two and three jobs. Kids are going home. There's no food. So we need to bring the food to the kids. There was already a wonderful snack and backpack program going on with the elementary school kids who are eligible for free or reduced lunch. But that didn't service the middle school. It didn't service the high school. So what we did was, with community partners, we opened up a pantry in Wasatch High School. And then we opened up food closets in both the middle schools. And what we're also doing is getting food to the kids when school's not in session. So, for example, we combine the wonderful Operation Hope program that's put on through the Christian Center, where families get Christmas gifts for their kids. And we combined it with our Christmas food box, and we gave away 400 bags of food that covered 2 weeks of Christmas break. We also just gave out 650 nutrition packs to elementary schools over spring break. And now the next thing we're really looking at is summer break. We have a free summer lunch program that goes on just during summer school. We extended it by 3 weeks last year, and now we want to have it all summer long. So that's our next big challenge.
Yeah. So what do we know about the housing issues, both emergency and affordable?
Well, emergency housing, there's none. There's none in the county. So, for example, if a police officer finds a family who's living in a tent in the Walmart parking lot, they'll call the transient bishop, and they may get one night in a hotel. That doesn't stabilize a family. A family needs, you know, a couple months that are taken care of so that they can be hooked up with community resources, they can get a job, they can get kids in school, if they need daycare, if they need training, whatever they need to become self-reliant. And I know here in Summit County, you have a couple residences that were donated. And so women with children can have up to, I think, like a year where they can stay. That is phenomenal. But we have nothing like that in Wasatch County. And I had the experience of working with a homeless family last summer, and it was really a challenge to get them stabilized. And we were able to get some money from a local church that would provide them rent for a room from a friend. and that was just for 1 month. So I hope that they did well after that. Affordable housing, we only have 2 affordable housing units, and they have a wait list of anywhere from 6 months to 3 years to get in, and they turn families away all the time. In fact, they've encouraged families to leave Wasatch County and go down to Provo, where they are now becoming more creative and able to provide more affordable housing than we can. So we've got some real challenges, but my experience is working with the right community entities and with the community that cares, you can tackle any of these problems.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me, though, the root problem is people don't have enough money.
Oh, exactly. I've been going around doing a presentation to local councils, and I call it the math behind the Wasatch Back, why families are struggling. And there's not they're not getting affordable wages. I mean, the poverty wage in Wasatch County is like $14.14. 23% of the renters are making about $12. And if you look at Walmart, they had a profit of $14.1 billion. The CEO made $22.8 million last year, and the 2.2 million employees that work for Walmart make like $9.29 an hour. So there are a lot of Americans. In fact, recent statistics showed a lot of Americans, 40% of Americans last year, struggled with housing, food, healthcare, and that's kind of a damning statistic for this nation. The governor has started a program called the Ready Grant, and what they're trying to encourage employers to do is to hire individuals for at least 30 hours a week for a consecutive 12 months and pay them 125% of what the Wasatch County wage would be. So it would bump it up from like $36,000 a year to $44,000. And if you do that as a small employer, you'll get $6,000 from the state up to $25,000. So we're trying to spread the word about that. People need to make more money. I have a little math example I share with the councils. And if a family has 3 children and one member is making $17.91 an hour, they're still going to come up about a little over $2,000 short a month just to live. So what are people doing? They're bunking in with grandma and grandpa, and they're not driving a new car, and they're going to the food pantry for food, and maybe they don't have the health care coverage that they need. So we see these scenarios all the time, and I volunteer at the Heber Center Stage Christian Center Food Pantry on Tuesdays, and it's young moms with kids. It's older adults. You see it across the generations.
Well, and we also see several families living in a unit for one family.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The poverty wage, $14.14. How does that figured? Just based on what it costs to rent and...
You know, I'm not really sure about that. I did a lot of review of statistics out there, and there's a lot of information about intergenerational poverty and wages. I'm sorry, I can't quote you where I got that, but that really stuck out when you see that how many renters are not making anywhere near there. And I give kudos to the city council in Summit County that I believe you guys increased your wage for employees to $15 an hour, and I'm seeing more and more businesses trying to do that. That's a start, but that's still not enough. When you look at housing in Wasatch County, the average home now costs $444,000. Who can afford that?
Yeah. You had mentioned about the emergency housing. You're working on a fund for that? Tell me a little bit about that.
What I'm trying to do, a lot of people, it's easy for them to wrap around hunger and to give food. It's like, okay, we're going to go to this event, we're going to give food. That's easy. But the harder thing to do is ask people for money. And what I want to do is try and develop an emergency fund. For example, we did the Super Bowl of Caring, and we raised like $1,000, and $300 of that I gave to Max Ventura, who is the emergency assistance coordinator for the Christian Center. So now he has a little more money that he can use to give towards emergency assistance, such as emergency housing. So I'm hoping to spread the word in Wasatch County and to encourage people to make a donation through the Wasatch Community Foundation for emergency housing, so we can slowly build that up. So if we run into families that unfortunately have already reached that homeless point, that we have some resources for them. And in 2017, the Wasatch County School District did a survey, and 257 families met the homeless definition already. And those are the families we mentioned. They're bunking out with grandma and grandpa, other families, living in a trailer, living in a tent, living in their car. So we already have a lot of families out there that need that help.
Okay. Your presentation, I think, is I found it online, so people can just search Wasatch Community.
You know, I will put it online. I do not have it online yet. I will download it to our Healing Hunger Here website, and I will also get it linked to the Wasatch Community Foundation website as well.
Okay. And if people would like more information, the Community Foundation does have a website?
Yes, they do. The Wasatch Community Foundation has a website. And if you go through the pillars, under the service pillar, you'll see my mug and my contact information.
Okay. Renee, anything else you wanted to add?
We can fix any problem, folks. Let's just get it together and make it easier for people to live. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming in. That's Renee Berkeley with the Wasatch Community Service Alliance. KPCW News Time now, 8:39. Good morning. Well, this Thursday, Centro Civico Mexicano in Salt Lake City will screen the film The Quiet Force, about how reliant American ski towns are on the Latinx workforce. Following the film, community organizer with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, Olivia Juarez, and Comunidades Unidas Community Organizing Manager, Mara Serrano, will be on a panel to discuss the film and its themes. Olivia is in the studio with me. Mara joins us now on the phone. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Olivia, you saw the film. What did you take away from it?
A pounding heart at the seeing the representation of Latinx community members skiing, me being the only one in my family and being in the resorts, being one of the very few people of color I see around me, and very special and important stories reflected. It jolted me.
Yeah. You work with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. The film's about mountain towns. Tell us the connection between what immigrant workers might experience in a ski town like Park City and the Red Rock tourist destination in Moab.
Park City and Moab have something very in common, and what that is the Latinx community workforce in hotels and restaurants and recreation and retail. That is the economic system that both Park City and the towns as gateways to our national parks and public lands share. And so we're showing that to highlight how Utah's recreation economy is really dependent on the Latinx workforce.
Yeah. And for you, Mayra, the part of the Comunidades Unidas' role is to empower immigrants by teaching them their rights as workers. I know you haven't seen the film, or maybe you have since we've talked, but talk about some of the challenges that the immigrant workforce in our ski towns here in Utah face.
Yeah, definitely. So what we've seen throughout the years is that a lot of immigrant workers, especially Latinx workers, experience everything from wage theft, discrimination in the workplace, and accidents in the workplace. And, you know, Comunidades Unidas has had a workers' rights and workers' safety campaign for the last 5 years, and our goal is to empower our communities to recognize their own potential and become a positive force for change in the larger community.
Yeah, so do you work with folks that are working in the industry, you know, the resort industry?
Yes, so we actually get calls from all over the state of Utah, from people that live in Park City, people that live in Salt Lake City, West Valley City. So yes, so we get a variety of calls here at our community center from all over the state.
Yeah, and so how are you able to help them?
Yeah, so sometimes we help them over the phone. Sometimes people feel more comfortable coming over to our own space and having a conversation with us. And in there, we're able to guide them about their rights and also about the process.
Yeah. So tell me, what are the rights of somebody who may not be here legally?
Yeah, so something that we tell, and this is one of the says that we have when we do our informational sessions, is that with and without documents, people have the same rights. So at the time that people are hired, the same protections apply. So we really try to inform and empower our community members that, you know, the same rights apply. Obviously, our communities are facing different kinds of barriers, such as language barriers, the fear, right? The fear that is currently feeling that it's all over the nation, right? So obviously, communities of color, workers of color, you know, workers that are immigrant face additional barriers that doesn't allow them to fully understand the process and or even do a claim.
Yeah. Olivia, you, as you kind of mentioned, someone who tries to get our minority communities engaged in the great outdoors, what are the biggest barriers to that?
Well, I think a lot of it is rooted in what Comunidades Unidas is working on, helping the community understand their rights. Ski resorts operate on public lands, our Red Rock deserts are public lands, and the Latinx communities in Utah have a shared right to those public lands and claiming them in that heritage. And so that's one of the first things that SUA is trying to help the community recognize, is that public lands are theirs too. In addition, other barriers getting onto public lands, I think, can be perceptual. If you think about somebody in your family who might have crossed the desert for 7 to 8 days, the Sonoran Desert, taking some relaxation time and a really like roughing it and going backpacking might not seem like the pleasant thing to do. And so we can still recognize that there are really leisurely ways that all community members can enjoy the outside. So a lot of it is perception, showing folks that the one man standing at the top of the peak in the elements isn't the only way that you should experience the great outdoors. It can be around the campfire with your kids, fishing, watching the stars, and cooking some really good carne asada.
Yeah. Rob Katt, CEO of Vail Resorts, was in Park City and for this community leadership talk, and he specifically talked about getting people of color onto our white slopes. How do we do that? I mean, it's an expensive sport. It's not only access to the mountain, but the equipment that's involved in it.
Certainly, nonprofits can serve a really important role in making sure that especially young people and families have access to that equipment so they at least know what they're investing into first. My first time skiing, having been born in Utah, was age 21. Tree Utah introduced me to a day on the slope, and I was able to figure out the equipment, and that opened up, you know, my perception as to like what I value and wanted to save my money towards. And so I think as long as there are programs out there like the Summit Land Conservancy who do programming to get young people in the outdoors and aware of what's needed to experience the trees, the clean air, the families will make it happen for sure.
And Maya, what's your guess? What would happen if the Latinx workforce weren't here at work in the resorts?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's super important to acknowledge the contributions that immigrants, the Latinx community is making in our local and on the larger economy. But I think it's also important, I think we're at a time where, you know, we're as immigrants, we're also asking to be, for our humanity to be recognized, right? So we are human beings. And yes, it's super important to acknowledge all the economic contributions that we do in the workforce. But I think right now we're at a time where we really need to be recognizing our humanity, which is really unfortunate, right? But I think it's super important to really, you know, really acknowledge all the contributions that we make, not just based on our work, because, you know, a lot of what we're hearing is a lot of our community members have mixed feelings, right? In a way, we get a message where they say, yeah, we want your labor. Come, you're super important. You are a crucial part of this. But then on the other hand, it's like, well, you know, we don't care about your struggles. We don't care about your family. We don't care about what you're going through. So I think it's really important that as a community, we come together and we really solidify this message that, yes, we need to recognize the contributions, the economic contributions, but also the humanity of immigrants.
Yeah. What I did not hear you say, though, I mean, what would happen would be some sort of economic collapse, no?
Definitely.
Yeah. What do you guys know about the filmmakers?
So Hillary and Sophie are either both from Jackson Hole or have been living there for a very long time. And so their film, The Quiet Force, was based off of an article written in an outdoor publication, which I can't think of right now, but this whole idea of bringing a center on the Latino workforce in the ski industry started in a paper. They caught on and said, let's make a film about this.
Okay. Again, who else is going to be on the panel besides you two?
There's going to be Jose Bonilla from Mosaic Interfaith Ministries, and then the Summit Land Conservancy Program Coordinator is going to join us.
Okay. Again, this film screening and panel discussion happening this Thursday, Centro Civico Mexicano in Salt Lake City. That's located at 155 South 600 West. Doors open at 5:30. The film starts at 6:30. I think there's, what, a $10 fee?
Yes, and all of the proceeds are going to benefit the migrant justice work of Mosaic Interfaith Ministries.
Okay. Anything else you two would like to add to that?
I just hope that the community recognizes how important it is to conserve all of our threatened public lands, because they are the very lands that bring a sense of healing to some of our community's most vulnerable population, Latino communities.
Okay. Olivia and Myrick, thanks for your time this morning. 8:50 now. Good morning. Well, Earth Day is happening Monday, April 22nd, and Recycle Utah will be celebrating. In the studio with details, I have Recycle Utah Director Carolyn Moore. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Earth Month.
Yeah.
April, we just kind of go crazy with celebrating the Earth all month long, all kinds of events. We do have Earth Day on Earth Day itself coming up Monday, April 22nd. That's in a little less than a week. Tickets are on sale now on our website. It's $35 for adults and $20 for kids 7 and older. And your ticket includes dinner, drinks, silent auction, and live music. If you want to get a head start on that silent auction, we do have all of our items listed online, and you can go to our website or social media and get a link to that. You're going to get a sneak peek, or if there's something you really want really bad, you can buy it ahead of time. It's kind of a new thing. We're trying to get some excitement and thank those that donated to our auction. Our Earth Day event celebrates all the great things we do in town, and it does support our education programs. We aim to educate over 5,000 elementary students in Summit and Wasatch County every year. And then we also do some adult education programs like our green business program and green drinks. So come out and celebrate the Earth with us. Also going on that day, I think that Swanner's doing a trash pickup. Park City Lodging's hosting a trash pickup in the Prospector area. So there's some ways to go get a little dirty before you come celebrate. So get outside and make our town look pretty.
Okay. So everyone can bid on these auction items, even though they may not attend the dinner?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. And then also coming up later this month, April 27th, it's the biannual Hazardous Household Waste Day.
Right. Yeah. You're going to be celebrating the Earth on Monday and cleaning out your garage by Saturday, same week. So that is Saturday, April 27th from 9 until 1. It'll be at the Canyons Cabaret parking lot. And this is in partnership with Sunrise Watery. They have about 30 volunteers that come out, make it so easy you don't even have to get out of your car. And then Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Summit County, and Park City Municipal help us pay the bill. This is an expensive event, and because of that, we do have some rules. No businesses are allowed. I can usually tell if your business, you have more waste than someone normally has in the garage. I can tell, and I will give you another option, but you won't be able to drop off. And then you must be a Summit County resident, and we do check zip codes at the door. And we do take mattresses. That's the only thing we charge for that day. Each piece of a mattress is $10, and it is recycled by Springback Mattress. And we also take things like paints, electronics, cleaning chemicals. The Sheriff's Department will be there taking medicines, and it's also Pharmaceutical Take-Back Day. It just happened to be on the same day as our hazardous waste event. And when you're cleaning out those medicines, nothing is too small. You know, if you see some old vitamins, it's okay to bring those kind of things in too, from prescription pills to vitamins. It's anything that's a pill that's in your cabinet, bring it to us and we'll make sure it gets disposed of properly. That stuff is never okay to flush down the toilet or the drain or even throw it away. It can be pretty harmful for our species that live in the water.
Okay, so you mentioned the only fee is for mattresses, so the electronics?
Yep, we do take electronics for free on that day. Usually at the recycle center, if you bring it to us on a normal day, we do charge fees for that. But we do take it fee free twice a year on the spring and the fall hazardous waste day.
Okay, so when's Dumpster Days happening?
That's the very last weekend of May. It's actually May 30th, 31st, and June 1st. And then the very last weekend in June. Then we take a few months off in the summer and come back again in the end of September and the end of October. And so last Thursday, Friday, Saturday of the month. So start cleaning up there. Anything that's too large for your household trash, it's a great thing to bring by. And if you're starting some gardening, we'll take that kind of stuff also.
Okay. And before we see you next on May 4th, you've got a sponsor now for Pride in Your Park Day.
Right. Yeah. Comcast Cares approached us earlier this spring, and they do a normal nationwide event called Comcast Cares, where they do volunteer events all in their communities, and they're helping us support that event. They're buying over 100 pickup sticks, so if you're planning to come pick up trash, we'll have a pickup stick for you, some t-shirts, and they're providing breakfast and coffee in the morning. And we're kind of expanding a little bit this year. We have 5 meeting locations that you can come check in at. City Park, Park City High School, the Winter Sports School, New Park, and then Jeremy Ranch. So plenty of places to come check in. We'll have leaders in each area that will be there to give you supplies and clean up. It's from 9 until 1. We encourage you to bring your own gloves and a water bottle and a coffee cup if you plan to have some coffee in the morning. And we'll give you all the supplies you need to clean up. And if you can only clean up for an hour or a half hour, we still encourage you to come. The more people we have, the cleaner we can get Park City.
Yeah, I caught my eye along I-80 there on the Jeremy Ranch
right.
side.
Yeah, that's right where I live.
It was amazing how much garbage there was along that fence.
Totally. That's one of the spots we added new this year just because we've had so many residents being like, can you please get a team out here? So my husband and another volunteer are going to lead that area. And I will specifically be in the New Park area, and we'll have some other volunteers in town. So just a leader in each spot, and we're kind of expanding. Normally we meet at City Park and kind of expand from there, but we're hoping to go a little bit bigger with the support of Comcast and their additional resources to get the event and the word out.
Okay. Let's see. Winter Sports Recycling Program. What? Tell me about this.
Yeah, usually in the winter we collect skis and snowboards, and that program is going to go to an end at the end of this month. And our summer programs will start. In the summer we take planter pots and bike tires. And the Planter Pot program is sponsored by Park City Nursery. And then Silver Star Ski and Sport sponsors our bike tire program. So it's great to have both community members supporting some funky things to recycle.
Okay. You do not take boots and or helmets?
No, those are not recyclable, unfortunately. The only way to recycle boots would be to take them all apart. The foam, the plastic, and the metal is the only reasons we can't recycle them. So I tell everybody if they want to go at their boots with a screwdriver, you can recycle it. But as a whole, it's not recyclable.
Okay. Any update on a new location for you?
No, we've been working with a local architect on a feasibility study, kind of helping us figure out our wish list of top A items, top B items, top C items, what do we want? And they've been very patient with us and our board and our team of what we'd like to see in a new facility and what we don't need in a new facility. And it's been a good exercise with our feasibility study and our members of our board. So we've been busy on that. Nothing to report as far as a new location yet.
Okay. And what about, I know that there had been some talk a while ago about this community composter. What are things with that? And then the kind of the, it's like an incinerator, but it's not really.
Right. I've heard rumors with the Summit County Solid Waste Department, and they've been talking with a private composter on that. And I don't really know where they've headed with that. And I also know the city's been working on some composting options for Main Street businesses. I don't have a lot of details on those things, but so something in the works for sure, something we're considering. You know that the county as a whole is looking at a waste study where they're going to see what's going into the landfill and who it's coming from and where we can make the biggest impact in diverting more from the landfill. So,
okay. Recycle Utah will be closed Easter Sunday, and then coming up May 14th, it'll be Green Drinks at River Horse on Main. Well, you'll be talking about our local recycling markets.
Yeah, that's we'll feature one of our local recyclers. So if you've seen all those articles about, you know, China's not accepting our waste, what's actually happening, the best way to really learn is to learn about what's happening locally. And we'll feature a speaker on that day. So join us May 14th.
Okay, Carolyn, anything else?
No, thank you.
Thank you. It's Carolyn Mora, Executive Director of Recycle Utah. KPCW News Time now, 8:57. Well,